the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, small business has been one of the largest engines of growth in the U.S. economy. There are a lot of value locked in closely held businesses, but what happens as the business owner himself or herself ages, they want to pass on the business to their heirs, or simply they're in a situation where they do not have succession or successors to their business? Joining us on the program is Larry Reinhartz. He's Managing Director of Woodbridge International. Larry, let's talk about that. The engine of growth in the U.S. economy has always been small businesses. You know, some of them start out small and they end up being giants like Google and Apple. But the vast majority of business in this country is closely held. It could be single individuals, a couple partners. But let's talk about that and the implications, because let's say I own a large business and I'm the sole proprietor. I own it all to myself. I'm getting on in age and I would like to pass it on to, let's say I do have heirs that could carry on the business. Let's talk about some of the problems that are created in succession.
You know, people that do have the next generation in the company with them. And by the way, we sell controlling interests in all kinds of businesses. And probably about 10 to 20% of the businesses we actually sell have the next generation active in the business. So the next generation is already active. And the reason that people are selling it is either one of two things. Either the heirs have said, you know what, I'm in the business and I'm helping you with this and I like it, but it's not my passion. And I don't want to do this another 10, 20, 30 years. Right? That's one perspective. The other perspective is the next generation is in the business, but the parents don't feel that the kids have the chops to really grow this. Where I've seen it be successful, and when I say successful, the transition from one generation to the next, is, you know, a couple of different things. The first thing is that the kids come into the business and they do every job in the business. They start out, you know, sweeping the floors, cleaning up, doing everything. You know, if they come in right out of college or right out of graduate school and are already given a senior leadership position without kind of doing every job in the company, that usually does not work out well because they don't get the respect and the trust of the employees. The way I've seen it work is when they come in and do everything and they're treated equally, sometimes even a little bit harder than the other employees. And the other thing I've seen work is they do come into the business, but then after college, they spend anywhere from 5 to 10 years outside of the family business, you know, being in the real world and knowing what it is to get beat up. and if they want to come back later on, then that's fine. And usually they're more seasoned and just have a better sense of how the world works. So anyways, so those are transitions I've seen that have worked.
What do you do, Larry, when you have a situation? And I can think of one of my largest clients ran a very, very successful car dealership. His dream, first of all, he was in partnership with another gentleman, but his dream was to bring his son into the business. His partner wanted to bring their daughter. In both cases, with both partners, neither of their children wanted to get into the business. They had no knack for it. They had no interest in it. So in the very end, they ended up selling the business because, they were getting on in age. They wanted to retire. Do you see this happen very often?
Oh, yeah. I mean, more often than not. You know, it used to be, I guess, like 30, 40, 50 years ago, it was kind of more automatic that the kids were coming into the business, not so much anymore. And we actually have done a fair amount of work in the developing world. So Latin America, India, and in those countries, it seems like more of an automatic that the kids are coming into the business, kind of like maybe like it was here 30, 40, 50 years ago. But in this country, that's changing. It's kind of no longer an automatic that the kids are coming in.
Yeah. Let me bring up another situation where, let's say you do have kids. They think they have the smarts to run the business, but the parents know that they don't. What kind of conflicts arise from that situation, and how do they get resolved?
Hopefully, you know, it's open, honest communication. I mean, I'm amazed at these family businesses that have stayed in the same family for more than a couple of generations, and they're growing and thriving. You know, those people have figured out governance and communication, you know. But the, you know, it becomes a financial issue. I've seen situations where people are in their 60s or 70s and the kids come in and the parents have a lot of their net worth in the business, and then the kids screw up the business, and it's hard. It's hard to start over again financially when you're in your 60s or 70s. So, you know, I think it's just honest, open communication. Sometimes what they'll do is they'll use intermediaries. It's sometimes people, you know, that you're not related to can act as a buffer to have the difficult conversations, but they need to be had because the kids also don't want to see their parents lose a lot of net worth. I think a lot of this comes down to financial planning, Jim. If you have a business, how concentrated are you? I mean, how much of your net worth is in the business? And if you're getting on in years and the bulk of your net worth is in the business, you know, there's some risk there and you have a concentrated position.
Yeah, I want to bring that up next because this can be an issue. Let's say you got Larry lots of bucks. His business is worth, I don't know, let's just make it easy and say it's worth $50 million. You have the issue of estate taxes. And if the bulk of the family's net worth is in the business, what do the heirs do? And especially if, let's say, the family business is debt-free, it's generating a lot of income, and all of a sudden, you know, what do you do when it comes to estate taxes that can take a considerable chunk of the business? How do you plan for that?
Yeah. Any planning with estate planning, that really needs to be done before a letter of intent is signed. There's things, and we're not estate planning people. We sell companies. But there are things you can do to get it out of your estate, you know, whether it's trusts or charitable remainder trusts or, but there has to be a lot of planning. I mean, it's funny. We had a 43-year-old guy. He sold his novelty gift item business and, you know, it was $30, $40 million. And, you know, this was really 99% of his net worth, 43 years old. So we brought it to market and we started getting these bids, 30, 35, 40 million. And I encouraged him to talk to estate planning people and wealth managers. He said, well, let me wait till the deal gets done. Let me wait till the money's in my account. I said, you know, Steve, it's too late then. He's like, too late for what? And I explained to him about estate taxes. And I said, you know, if you're going to do any planning like that to get some of this out of your estate, it's got to be done before a letter of intent is signed, before there's a written document that establishes value. Because once that happens, it's already too late. So any kind of estate planning where you're going to look to get money out of your estate and set it aside, it really needs to get done before there's an established value.
So, you know, this is a very important message, Larry, that, you know, a lot of our listeners, some of them are own their own businesses, and you really have to start thinking about that. And I don't care whatever age you are, your 43-year-old could get in a traffic accident and get on the wrong freeway. So, I mean, you know, a lot of times when you see people that are younger that are very successful, they think, well, I don't need to worry about that, you know, because I'm in my 30s, 40s. That's a long ways away from now. But we know tragedy can sometimes hit in unexpected ways. So what would you say when you're looking at businesses, the most likely outcome, at least from what I've seen in my years in the business, very seldom do you see, let's say, a family that has heirs who are, number one, capable, and number two, have an interest of carrying on the family business. That case, is it best to go to someone like yourself and say, hey, we need to create a liquidity event. We need to do some estate planning.
I think the helpful thing is to come to somebody like me. It doesn't have to be somebody like me. It could be a valuation company, but I think business owners just need to be aware of the value of their company and what drives value. You know, what kind of metrics drive value? And that's a discussion. That's how I spend most of my time. You know, there's some people I talk to where a couple of months later they hire us to sell the company because they are trending at a level that makes economic sense for them. In other words, I've talked to them about realistically how much we could sell the business for. And their feeling is, well, if I get that now, then that's great. Let's go to work. Or there's other people like the novelty gift item guy that I described. It was actually 7 years. I mean, from the time I first talked to him until he hired us to sell the business was 7 years. And I talked to him every 6 months or so, and it was always this discussion about the business. How's the business trending? You know, what realistically could I get? And finally, when he wanted to hire us, he didn't come to me and say, I want to sell. He came to me and said, you know what? To really get this business to the next level, I need logistics and supply chain people. Do you know any consultants? And we started talking about it more. And he said, you know, I feel like I'm a caretaker. I'm kind of bored with this. It doesn't get my juices flowing anymore. So then I started telling him about how much he could get for it. And he said, wow, if I can get that now, and I know the business is performing well, there's a lot of money in the market, I just don't want to miss this window. You know, I don't want to look back and say, I was once worth $30 million. So I think it's just for people to be aware. And that's, those are discussions I have all the time. And it's non-committal. And it's just a check-in as to where you're at and how much the business is worth. And a lot of people I talk to, the discussion is, okay, we think it's worth about $25 million. You're telling me you need $35 million. If you need $35 million, here's some of the things you may want to think about. And I just give them high-level things of things they could work on, whether it's their customer base, whether it's their management team, whether it's their distribution, whatever it is. And then I just give them a roadmap on financially how they have to look.
Larry, let's talk about another issue when it comes to the sale of the business. Obviously, when you're in a strong economic upturn, as we've recently seen with economic growth this year, it's kind of like the stock market. You're probably going to realize and get more money when the economy is booming than versus, let's say, you go into a severe downturn as we did in 2007 and 2009. So what about economic timing?
Yeah, somebody once asked, I think Andrew Carnegie or something, how'd you get all your money? I sold too soon. So, you know, look, I 2008, 2009, you know, we got very spiritual. I think a lot of people got very spiritual. It was pretty brutal. And there were a lot of people that hired us 2008, you know, the first part of 2008, and, you know, their businesses fell off. And then we had to wait sometimes a year, sometimes 2 years, sometimes 5 years until their businesses started trending back up again. And we brought them back to market and we got them done. So, you know, that being said, we did get deals done during the recession. There were companies we sold, you know, 2008, 2009. Because in every economy, there's always businesses that are performing. You know what I mean? There's fewer of them. And you know, but the interesting thing then, there weren't a lot of companies coming to market. So whatever companies did come to market got a ton of attention, you know, because there was a shortage of deals. But make no mistake, the people that sold 2008, 2009, the valuations they got were probably about 20% less than they are now. You know, so you're absolutely right. I mean, I think there's three triggers. You know, one is, how is the overall economic climate, the macro economy, how is that doing? And if that's doing well, that's a good time to sell. The second thing is, how's your business performing? If your business is performing well, that's ideal, you know, because nobody wants to catch a falling knife. But the third thing is, and it's the most important, is, where are you mentally? Like, if somebody gave you your number, would you pull the trigger? And I can't tell you how many people hire us and we go to market and we even do better than what we talked about. You know, we get them better values than we communicated up front. And now they're looking at it and they're like, well, I'm gonna, now what do I do? And they start thinking it through. Like, we had one guy that said, well, you know, I thought about this, but if me and my wife spend more than 5 hours a day together, we'll end up getting divorced. Okay. You know? So if they're not mentally prepared and if they haven't kind of visualized this and understand, how am I going to spend my time? It's great I'll have all this money, but how am I going to spend all my time? So being mentally prepared, that's probably so there's three things. There's the macro environment, how the company is performing, and are they in a place mentally to pull the trigger if the right buyer comes along?
I want to bring up another issue that may not even involve a sale, but it's an issue that we're working on now with a client that has a very successful business. And that is, Larry, getting a business evaluated, especially when the business represents the major bulk of the family's net worth. And the only reason we're doing that is right now the exemption on estate planning is over $11 million. So we are going to take shares in this business and put it into an irrevocable trust after getting the business valuated, because we want to get it out of the estate and subject to estate taxes. So let's talk about that for a moment, because let's say you're in your 30s, 40s, mentally, your company's doing well, you like what you're doing, the economy is doing well, you're not even thinking of selling, you do have a succession plan, but it may be important to get the business evaluated just for estate planning and tax purposes.
Correct, correct. And that is something that we do not do. There are valuation firms that do that, but that makes all the sense in the world. I mean, what you're talking, and again, I'm not like an estate planning, but that makes all the sense in the world to evaluate that.
Now, your company has been very successful and is well known for finding liquidity, creating liquidity events for businesses. Over the years, as you have been doing this, could you boil it down to a couple of key factors that, number one, as you mentioned, you just mentioned three things: the macro environment, how well the company's performing, and where you are mentally. Any other key factors that you have come across or experienced that are critical in a closely held business?
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake I've seen business owners make, because we've been in business 25 years, I've been doing this 13 years, but the biggest mistake I've seen business owners make is they wait too long. In other words, you know, I talked about Andrew Carnegie, that we sold too soon. You know, I talked to them about realistic value ranges, and, you know, their feeling is, okay, yeah, if I get that $50 million, that's more than enough money, and I should really do this now. But then they start thinking, well, but you know what? I'm going to do better next quarter. I'm going to do better next year. And, you know, businesses trade on a multiple of earnings, so they know that the higher my profits and the better the outlook, the more money I'll get, which is true. So, you know, and look, it's natural, because entrepreneurs and business owners are optimistic, you know, and they're forward-looking and they're the future. But what they don't get, and I'm really talking about the people that have concentrated positions where the business, you know, if they don't get that $15 million, you know, they don't have money put aside. I mean, this is it. That they're kind of playing with fire if they kind of keep trying to push the envelope. And I hear a lot of, well, I want to time it perfectly. I want to sell it at the peak. But you only know when the peak is until after it's already peaked. And then it's too late.
Yeah, Larry, it's kind of like the stock market.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's a perfect analogy.
Yeah, because
it's
you always think analogy. That the market's going up, next quarter's
right.
Earnings are going to be higher. So, you know what?
Exactly.
It's got further to run and I can make more money. Let's talk about another situation that arises. And let's say you own a company. And let's just make this real easy. And the company's worth $10 million, but you are pulling out a chunk of money. You're pulling out 20% of the value of the company in earnings. You're making a couple million dollars a year. Okay, now you sell it. Here's the problem that a lot of owners don't realize. Okay, you're going to have capital gains. So you're going to have over 20% to the federal government. And if you live in a state like I do, California, you got another 13.3% to the state. So you basically have almost 35-37%, or let's just round it off and say a third of the business sale goes to Uncle Sam and your governor. Can individuals live with a lower level of income? Because let's say in the case of a $10 million company, let's just say a third of it goes to the government. So now the owner only has $7 million to live on when he was used to pulling out $2 million. He's not going to make $2 million on $7
million. Correct. Yeah, no, you're right. It's different risk, right? So, it depends on what stage they're at. If they're at the stage where this is really going to be it, and they're not going to do anything else, they're not going to work, they're not going to have another business, then they're looking to live off of this income that they get from the sale, then our advice would be, well, it's too soon for you to sell, right? I mean, we don't try to fit a square peg in a round hole. But if you have people like this 43-year-old guy, even though it was enough money for him, he just loves building companies, and he's going to buy something else. Or I'll give you... We did a deal for a 28-year-old kid in Chicago. He was selling martial arts equipment over the internet. And his thing was, and he got the business of $7 million of revenue, but his thing was, I'm not having fun anymore because now I've become an executive. I've gotten away from the creative stuff. I have all these employees. So just I want to be freed up from the stuff that I don't like doing, the inside executive function. So we did a deal where he put $4 million in his pocket. It was more money than he ever dreamed of. He knows he's not done financially, but he's happy because the guys that bought, and he retained 20% of the business. The guys that bought him are going to free him up from the inside business stuff. There were a bunch of ex-Lehman guys, financial guys, that are going to build out infrastructure. And he got back to the product development stuff. So his thing wasn't, well, I need to live off this money. His thing was, I don't like this anymore. I want to get back to the stuff that I like. But if they're really living, looking to live off of that money, the simple math you did makes all the sense in the world. And if they're living, looking to live off of that, then, you know, don't sell now, you know, continue to grow the business, or, you know, maybe you're going to have to do something else. But we always want to communicate to people a value that we're confident of achieving. And if we do better, then that's great. We just don't want to go out to market and we do worse. So it'll just, it just helps them with their planning. There's always positive surprises where we do a lot better, and, but they can't, you can't bank on that. You know, you just need to be realistic.
Yeah, another area that I see, and we encourage this with a lot of our entrepreneur business owners, and that is, you know, running a business today, running your own business with competition, the economy, is risky. It's obviously better because you're going to make more money, but we always encourage entrepreneurs when it comes to if their business is thrown off enough cash in their personal investments to be more conservative. And sometimes, Larry, that's hard because entrepreneurs are used to making high returns on their investments. And it's really hard sometimes to coach them and say, look, with your personal stuff, why don't we be a little bit more conservative? Number one, just in case the economy turns down and you're going to have to tap into that. So let's talk about that for a moment and the importance, because it could really hurt an individual if the economy turns down.
Oh, that's huge. Too many entrepreneurs I see, they don't put money away. You know, they don't do what you're talking about. They don't diversify. They don't even have any retirement plan set up. It's amazing. They don't, no 401ks, no pension plans, no nothing. And I think that's playing with fire. And it very well said how you put that, Jim. Their risk is their business. That's their risk. And for most of them, that's what they enjoy. But, you know, it makes sense just to allocate, and just for tax purposes too. You just lower your income taxes, just to put some, whether it's retirement plans, however you're going to do it, but that shouldn't be really risk assets. It's, you know, you take your risk in your business and then leave it to you to help them allocate a conservative portfolio. Yeah, we see it. I mean, this, again, this 43-year-old guy, now, I think he did have $500,000 in a 401k, and he had his $500,000 house, and, but, you know, but there are other people that we see in their 50s or 60s that have nothing. No IRAs, no 401k, like, no, it amazes me, you know?
It's one of the big mistakes. We finally had an individual, had a very successful business. And what happened, Larry, is he didn't put his personal investments, which weren't with us at the time, were in all in the stock market. And unfortunately, 2007 and 2009 came, and he lost more than half of it.
No, it's amazing to me how these people, and no, it's really most of our clients. I mean, people with 20, 30, 40, 50, $100 million businesses, and they haven't put any money away. And it's money they're not going to miss, you know what I mean? Whether it's $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a year, it's not going to affect their lifestyles.
So, Larry, if we were to boil this down, a couple key things that you pointed out earlier. Number one, whether to sell or not, it depends, number one, on the macro economy. Obviously, when the economy is booming, as it has been doing this year, you're going to get a higher multiple for the business. Number two, how well is your business performing? And if it's doing very, very well, that makes it more sellable. And number three, where are you mentally? Are you ready to step down? And if you do step down, do you have plans to do other things that would keep your mind occupied? Anything else that you would add to that as we close?
No, I mean, I think it's always helpful, Jim, just to have a check-in with somebody like me. What's my business worth and how much could I get for it? And what kinds of things can I do to improve the value? You know, and those are always discussions we're happy to have on a non-committal basis.
Larry, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out more about what you do, how could they find out about your business and how could they contact you?
I appreciate that, Jim. So our website, www.woodbridgegrp. It's woodbridgegrp.com. And I'm Larry Reinhars. My phone number is 203 389-8400, extension 209.
Well, Larry, listen, I'm glad to have you on the program. Thanks for your input. We hit upon some really key areas. And if you are an entrepreneur out there and you have a very successful business, I hope you have found this helpful. But, you know, do some estate planning, some tax planning with your advisor, and don't get caught up in a tragedy as we so often see with closely held businesses. Larry, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye. I hope if you have a closely held business and you're fortunate enough, you're doing very well, I hope you found this helpful because there are so many things that you need to do if you are running a successful business. As Larry talked about, you need to take a look at where is your business now with the booming economy? How well is your business performing in the economy that we find ourselves in? And where are you mentally? Do you have a succession plan? Have you had your business valuated? And are you doing things that diversify, especially when all your net worth is primarily tied up in the business itself? Do you have, for example, a pension plan? Surprising, a number of companies that don't. Or do you have a conservative portfolio that's liquid and not as risky as the risk you're taking in your business? Those are the questions you should be asking yourself because we know the Fed and the government haven't repealed recessions, nor have they repealed bear markets. Sooner or later, this economy will be in another recession and a bear market. And what would that mean to your business? I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.